Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Sally O'Courtney, and welcome to Public Advocates. I am running for Public Advocate of New York City, and my entire premise is Ban Vaccines 2013. Now, my guest this afternoon is going to be Cindy Sheehan, and she has been speaking out against war since her son was killed over in Iraq. However, I am speaking out against the silent war on children all over the world, and it is in the form of vaccines. I have seen the ingredients. I will post the ingredients underneath the interview because you need to know it's 100% poison. And the premise that we have been sold is a false premise. In fact, the vaccine hoax is over. You need to know it because you can't take action until you do. The vaccine hoax is over because 30 years of secret documents have been released because of a pediatrician whose child was autistic. It took her 7 years to get these documents released, and basically they show intent, the intent to give the diseases they claim to prevent. So there's nothing stopping us except inaction. And this is a call to action. April is Autism Awareness Month, and we are going to have actions in Washington, D.C. I certainly want you to contact me at cease4peace@gmail.com if you would like to get involved. I hope that you will. But cease4peace, it's cease4peace@gmail.com. So cease4peace certainly pertains to war as well. Now, there is a draft that is afoot. Charles Rangel's bill is now in the Armed Services Committee, and I'm asking people to contact the chair of that committee and say that they don't want to see a draft. Now, it is a draft, both civilian and a war-like draft, but it seems that we are at war even here at home. I don't know who saw Rand Paul speaking on C-SPAN for 13 hours against the appointment of Brennan for CIA director, and his premise was basically drones and the lack of clarity in terms of who would be a target. And so this is a very big issue. I've interviewed Judge Napolitano about this, and he makes it quite clear that it is unconstitutional in every regard. So I will also put that interview underneath this one. So as I wait for Cindy Sheehan to call in, I would like to say that she was a great admirer of Hugo Chavez, who recently died. She wrote a book called Revolution, A Love Story, which is the story of his struggle and his and prevailing. And also, Cindy and I have something in common that not many people would expect, and yet it's no surprise when I'll tell you. It is our love of George Carlin. So in honor of our mutual love of George Carlin, allow me to recite my ode to George Carlin. G is for George, slayer of people. E is for egging folks on under steeple. O is for outlandish remarks he dispenses. R is for righteously tearing down fences. G is for Celt with ancient Gaul. E is for everyone he has appalled. C is for characters drawn from reality. A is for arrogance jibed with finality. R is for rhyming one-syllable words. L is for laughing when they sound absurd. I is for ignoring the language offensive. N is for enjoying his mind. It's immense. I do believe I have Cindy Sheehan on the line. Cheerio.
Hello?
Hi, Cindy. What a pleasure to have you on the line.
Hi, Sally. It's nice to talk to you.
Well, I invited you on so that you could promote your tour de peace. But I would like you first to speak about Hugo Chavez, if you will.
Well, Hugo Chavez, president of Venezuela, I think everybody knows, had almost a 2-year battle with cancer, and he passed away on Tuesday, March 5th. And, you know, I'm just personally devastated because I knew him personally. And he was an amazing, generous, kind, brilliant, dedicated person whose heart was filled with love for the poor and marginalized. And he will be sorely missed. Every revolutionary around the world should, you know, recognize his contribution to furthering a revolution and helping the poor. And as you know, he not just helped the poor of Venezuela, but he helped the poor of the Northeast in the United States by giving free or heavily subsidized heating oil, because, you know, we know how expensive that is and the harsh winters there. And when it was Joseph Kennedy, I think, Jr. When he said, when he reached out to oil companies and said, can you help us with this project, CITGO, which is the U.S. subsidiary of the Venezuelan oil company, was the only one to do it. They were the only one to say yes. Hugo Chavez tried to send aid to Katrina, and so did Castro. The Cuban government wanted to send many doctors to New Orleans, but they were rejected. That aid was rejected. So he was just a humanitarian, and I believe, I've been to Venezuela several times, and I've spoken to Venezuelans and to people whose lives were profoundly improved and whose conditions were elevated because of Hugo Chavez's Bolivarian Revolution. I don't think, you know, like I said earlier, when I was recording my own show, I said, you can kill the revolutionary, but you can't kill the revolution. If the revolution, the revolution in Venezuela has had about 14 years to take root, and those are some deep roots there. The people have been educated. Illiteracy has been erased in Venezuela. Poverty has been diminished profoundly in Venezuela. I don't think the people are going to go back to the time when the U.S. had a puppet government there. I don't think it's going to happen.
I visited Venezuela in 1974 and 75, and I just want to tell you that I remember staying with a friend of mine who lived there, and she was affluent. And all along the highways, people were selling tissues, sliced oranges, and she said to me, do you see at nighttime, do you see all those lights? And I said, yes, Lord knows, there are millions of them. She said, they are the poor. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, oh my Lord, they so vastly outnumber the affluent. One wonders, and she said every year during monsoon season, all of their houses built of mud come sliding down. And I said, you mean they lose their homes annually? I mean, it was just such
yes.
a stunning revelation to see that many poor people in one country, and to know that he has done a lot to turn that around, and to know that everyone's educated. That is really quite remarkable.
He has been, you know, amazing and very energetic and very dedicated to his vision. And like I said, he has created a whole infrastructure. You know, people, I really dread looking at our own media because they have lied about him all along, you know, for the last 14 years. But to say Venezuelan strongman, autocrat, dictator, you know, whatever, it's just baloney.
Well, that's what I wanted. you to address, because I saw an interview with you on mainstream media, a woman, I believe her name was Maureen, or
Nora O'Donnell.
Oh, Lord. And
yeah.
she basically accused you of supporting a dictator, and you said this man was democratically elected each and every time by the people. Would you clarify that? I mean, tell people that, in fact, a dictator is not elected normally.
Well, the one thing about elections, you know, especially here in the United States, elections can be profoundly compromised. And really, even if, like, look at us, we get to vote for candidate Goldman Sachs candidate A or Goldman Sachs candidate B, or, you know, Boeing candidate A or Boeing candidate B. We don't get to vote for the candidates of the people in the first place. And then in the second place, our elections are so tampered with that, to me, they're almost an exercise in futility. But Chavez has brilliantly, every election, brought in international election observers to certify the validity of every election. This past election in October, where he won with 54% and the opposition candidate Capriles only got 45%, Jimmy Carter and other election observers certified the validity, transparency, and accuracy of that election at 100%. And Venezuela has the most accurate and valid elections of any other country on the globe. So to me, that's true democracy. When the people can go and vote, and they know that their votes are counted, and they know that their votes mean something, and they know that their votes are valid. And even if Capriles got elected, the people would have to say, well, that's what the people of Venezuela chose. And in 2002, when the United States tried to overthrow Chavez, and the people surrounded the presidential palace, you know, 100,000 people surrounded the presidential palace. I saw interviews with some people saying, you know what, I didn't vote for him, and I don't like him, but how dare the United States try to remove our democratically elected president? It's none of the business of the United States of America. So wouldn't it just be amazing if we lived in a country where democracy was as protected as it is in Venezuela? And look, now they're going to have another election, because in 1998, the people of Venezuela rewrote the Constitution to make it more democratic. And they didn't believe that it was democratic just to have the vice president automatically succeed the president if something happened to him. Here in the United States, it's like a team. They're like a team that you vote for, so it's not the same thing. In Venezuela, the vice presidents are chosen by the president. And so they have to be in office for 2 years before there's an automatic succession. So they're going to have another election coming up to vote in a new president to take Chavez's place. So it's all very transparent. It's all very democratic. And for anybody to call him a dictator or an autocrat or whatever is just pure, it's just a lie. It's just an out-and-out lie.
We can call it, or we can call it misinformation. You know, it's misinformation.
It's total. There's not even like any, sometimes there's like a small basis that you can build lies on. This doesn't even have any basis to build a lie on.
Well, I developed something in my multiple runs for office that I really tried to get to the Ron Paul camp, because I saw that he was filling stadiums and the other fellow was filling conference rooms. And so I went to his Christmas party and I said, if you will do this, and I had it all written up and I distributed it to 250 people there. And I said, basically, you take a picture of your vote and with your cell phone, you say that that's your voter's receipt, and then you forward it to the his campaign email, and then he'll have a vote count. I said if 1/15 of the people who are his supporters will do this, he can verify the fact that he has won. It didn't catch on.
I thought
on.
It's
I'm
against
really
the law to take a picture of your ballot,
no, it's
though.
No, absolutely not. In
because
fact,
I took a picture of mine when I voted for myself, and somebody told me I could like get a federal charge against me for doing
absolutely
that.
Absolutely not. No. In fact, I know that through the Board of Elections. And the first time I did that, I tried to do that, I was stopped. And I said, you know, I'm allowed to do this. And the person, I said, you know, take me to the person who's in charge of the polling place. And she told me that according to the election rules that I wasn't. I said, wonderful, show that to me.
Uh-huh.
And she said, I don't have it here. I said, you don't? This is a polling place. Where else is it needed? I know that it is allowable. I have checked. So all I can say is in New York State, this is allowable. I don't
uh-huh.
know about your state, but I was, you know, prevented from doing it, and there was a policeman present next to the person who was telling me not to, and I was like, you have no, I know, and you don't know, and you can't show me it because you don't even have it. So I was just, anyway, next, I would like to speak with you about your tour de piece, because you are going across the United States from California to Washington, D.C. You're taking a southerly route. I checked to see if you would be coming through New York, and I saw that you weren't. But would you like to tell people what states you'll be, your route of travel? I'll post it also underneath this interview so people can contact you.
Well, yes, we're starting here in Vacaville, California on April 4th, and that's the day my son was killed in Iraq, and that's also the day that Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. And the year before he was assassinated, of course, he gave his speech at the Riverside Church, his Beyond Vietnam speech, where he linked poverty, racism, and militarism together as the biggest threats to humanity, and they still are. And they've even gotten worse. And so 5 years we've had a Democratic president who's a man of color, and things are getting worse in all of those aspects, militarism, racism, and poverty. And so we're starting on April 4th at my son's grave here in Vacaville, and we're taking Route 66 from California to Chicago. Route 66 is historical and also meaningful. And one of the nicknames of Route 66 is the Mother Road. And so we know that women and mothers suffer the most from war at the hands of the profiteers and the militarists. And then from Chicago, so Route 66 goes through California, Arizona, New Mexico, a little bit of northern Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri, and then Illinois. And so then we're going, look at me, I'm how good I am at geography and everything.
I'm very impressed.
Yeah. that was pretty amazing what I just did. And then we're taking different routes from Chicago to D.C., and we'll be in Michigan, we'll be in Ohio, we'll be in Pennsylvania, Virginia, West Virginia, and Maryland. So the route is posted at tourtopeace.org. We're flexible. We do have many events already set up along the way. But if we're on the route and you'd like to help with an event, or you'd like to host us camping, a hot shower, a vegan potluck, you know, whatever, you can go to our website, tourtopeace.org, and my sister, Dee Dee Miller, is coordinating the volunteers and the events. So her email is Dee Dee, 4 peace, Dee Dee 4 peace, at gmail.com. But all that information's at tourtopeace.org. So we're very excited about it. The excitement is growing. It took a little while to catch on. I was getting very discouraged, but you know, more and more people are signing on to help. They're signing on to ride. If you want to ride, you don't have to ride from California to Washington, D.C. You can ride any part of it that you want to ride. There is, I want to say, and this is also up at the website, there's going to be a solidarity ride from New Jersey down to Washington, D.C., so that's kind of in your area.
Wow.
Yeah, people can do those kinds of solidarity rides. And then on July 3rd, we're planning on converging in Washington, D.C. We're going to start at Arlington Cemetery, and we're going to ride our bikes across the bridge to the White House. We're going to encircle the White House, and I hope there's going to be thousands of us on bikes, you know, on foot, whatever. And we have a list of demands that we're going to present to the President and Congress. And so we're really just, you know, trying to make it as easy for everybody to be involved in some way for Tour de Peace.
Could we get a preview of that list of demands?
It's also at the website, tourtopeace.org. I can pull it up right away, but of course the major one is end all wars and close the bases around the world and bring our troops home. And it's a bike ride, and we really want to highlight the fact that, you know, we're not part of the establishment environmental movement that tells Obama not to sign the pipeline, but that says we still love you. You know, we're part of the environmental movement that gets on our bikes and says that there has to be an end to the use of all fossil fuels, not just foreign fossil fuels, that the technology for alternative, sustainable, renewable energy is here right now. And so that's part of the reason we're riding bikes instead of taking a cross-country bus tour or van tour or whatever. And another one of our demands is to say, end the prosecution and persecution of whistleblowers. Hold members of this administration and past administrations accountable for war crimes and crimes against humanity, and the suppression of our civil rights. And we want, one of the reasons, you know, Washington, D.C., I like to call it washed up deceit, and I don't like to spend that much time there anymore. I used to spend a lot of time there. But one of the reasons why we're taking 90 days is it's about the journey. It's not about the destination. One of our goals is to end partisan apathy and inaction. If we say that we're anti-war and if we say we care about humanity, then we can't be supporting an empire that is a major destructor of a destroyer of humanity, destroyer of the environment, destroyer of civil rights. So we just hopefully, you know, when I sat down in Crawford, Texas in 2005, the anti-war movement was demoralized and minuscule. And that kind of rallied it back up again. And so this is one of the things that we're hoping to do, is to meet with people who feel the same way we do, but also to inspire other people to look inside at your own principles. What are your own principles? And if your core principles don't resonate with Barack Obama and the empire, then you need to do something about it.
Well, what did you think of the speech that Rand Paul made on the floor of the Senate last night, trying to call attention to CIA drones and the new director?
Well, like one of my Facebook friends said, how can he dare vote for NDAA and then get up and say he's against it?
No, he didn't vote for it.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. He voted for it. He tried to offer some amendments, but he voted for it. Sally, I think it's a show. I think Washington, D.C. is a show, and it's not as funny as wrestling. You know, it's all partisan pandering. Rand Paul wants to run for president in 2016. Rand Paul went to Israel to pledge allegiance to Israel. You know, it to me, it's just all a partisan show. I'm glad that it might be calling attention to drones and to the assassination program. That's a good thing about it. But we can't look to Washington, D.C. for our answers or the solutions. The solutions have to be Occupy. The solutions have to be our own solutions.
Good point. I know that I have quoted you maybe 1,000 times with this quote that the Democrats and the Republicans are the left and right wing of the War Party.
War Party and the Party of Wall Street. That's what they are. And, you know, there might be once in a while, there might be something good that happens in Washington, D.C., but I would like to recommend to you, if you haven't watched this, and to your listeners, that Netflix series called House of Cards, and Kevin Spacey plays the majority whip in this. And it, to me, that's what Washington, D.C. is. Washington, D.C. is all about power. It's all about profit. It's all about what the individual can get, not what the individual can do for others. And it's a very interesting fictional account, but to me, it's like factional. It's actually what happens in Washington, D.C. And so if Rand Paul, you know, did something which part of it we could support, good. You know, that's awesome. But we can't look to that terrible, cancerous, malignant place for solutions that are going to help us.
So what do you recommend we do?
Well, I recommend that we support actions that are outside of the two-party system. And, you know, I was just on a call, and I said, if it really would cause you any kind of pain not to vote, then you should go and vote for a third party or an independent candidate to register your opposition to the so-called two-party system. But voting is the very least thing that we can do to create change. In fact, it doesn't create change. To me, it creates support for the system. And so there's, God, so many things that we can do. Remember when you hosted me in 2009 when I was doing my Myth America tour?
Yes, I do.
That was really awesome. That was amazing.
That was really awesome, wasn't it?
Yeah, really. But the thing is that, you know, many people have started to do things like that. They're creating healthy communities that don't rise and fall on the vagaries and the crimes of Washington, D.C. They're growing their own food. They're creating opposition to GMOs. That's a huge movement that's very positive and very grassroots. I say be involved grassroots and be involved locally. And until the situation we have where we can rise up, you know, as a people in revolution and overthrow our government, I think that that's the best solution, is to focus on localization.
Well, what do you think of this quote from the Declaration of Independence? Government can only rule by the consent of the government. How can I quote that much? Government can only rule by the consent of the governed. Thomas Jefferson, the Declaration of Independence. If we don't give our consent, we have to people say, I don't comply, but when you don't comply, it's because someone is giving you an order and then you don't comply. We don't consent. We are the authority. And if we don't consent, that is sufficient. And as far as I can see, the people of America do not consent to 90% of what's transpiring.
Well, I think this is like a hard situation because I would think that most Americans are just struggling to pay their rent and to survive in this system that we have, and they don't think that much about that it's a systemic problem. And that's something I said in Myth America, and that's why I was so happy about Occupy, because, you know, people get so stuck in their own pods here in the United States that they don't go to their neighbors and their community and realize that it's a systemic problem, not a personal problem. And so people, you know, like us, realize that when Thomas Jefferson was articulating that in the Declaration of Independence, he was declaring some basic human rights. And, you know, the right to overthrow your government when it doesn't meet your needs anymore is a basic human right. But how do we do that here in the United States when our elections are so compromised and when the propaganda is so profound and when it's so hard to make ends meet? You know, how do we create a condition where many people are believing that? And we have to look back at our own revolution, too. It was only maybe 1% of the population at the time that were involved in it.
Well, I remember when you had Terry Lee on your show, a mutual friend of ours, and she was basically campaigning to have people not vote. So I like the idea. If that meant we also didn't get government. So, again, I called the Board of Elections, and I said, I believe that if less than 50% of the registered voters vote, that that is then a mandate for no government. And he laughed and laughed and laughed and said, if one person votes, that's good enough. I was like, he said, we would have no government already were that the case, less than 50% of the. I said, well, I really wanted to know before I went and supported her I then went a different route. I just said, everybody write in band vaccines when you go to the polls, you know?
Uh-huh.
I appreciated where she was coming from, but wouldn't it be wonderful if by not voting we could get no government?
And that's another thing, too, is that 50% of the people don't vote. Isn't it only about 35% of everybody eligible to vote that actually do vote? But then the politicians will say, and they barely get a majority, you know, they only win by a couple percentage points, and then they say they have a mandate, that their agenda has a mandate. And I always say, well, you have a mandate of only like 51% of 35% of the people that bother to go vote. How can you call that a mandate?
Well, that's certainly something that needed to be said. I want to talk to you about the many countries you have traveled to as a peace ambassador. What countries have invited you to come and, you know, be part of the peace process and speak about peace? Have countries themselves invited you, governments, or has it been the people?
It's mostly been grassroots. You know, grassroots organizations and peace organizations that have invited me. Usually the government, the countries that I go to, the governments are collaborators with the U.S. government, and so we oppose the government of the country I'm invited to and as well as the government of the United States. Yeah, that was the case in Japan when I was in Japan for 2 weeks. That's the case in South Korea. All over Europe, you know, the governments pretty much are, and not everybody in government, because, you know, I have met legislators and other government officials that don't support what the United States is doing, but of course they're a minority in their government. The only few countries I've been to where I've also been welcomed wholeheartedly by the governments are Venezuela and Cuba. And so I did You know, I have met with high officials in Spain and Ireland and Italy, and I was given a reception by the Marxist mayor of London in 2005, Ken Livingstone. He's not mayor anymore. I was given an award by the president of the province of Tuscany in Italy, and I was given a reception by the mayor of Rome, but he was also a Marxist. So, you know, there's been few instances of that, but it's mostly grassroots people.
Hasn't been there Norwegian royalty who has even said they wanted to meet you before they died?
It wasn't royalty. There was a very popular activist entertainer in Norway named Erik Bye, B-Y-E, and he was like, it was the king and queen and then him. So he was like the third most popular person in the country, and he's very popular in Scandinavia, but it was his widow. His widow wanted to meet me, and she passed away and before we could meet, but her children brought me to Norway and gave me the Erik Bye Award, Peace and Justice Award. So that was another really nice, welcoming. And I love going to Scandinavia because the people there are so intense and committed to social justice and to peace, but it's too cold. Ooh. And I feel like I'm with my people because I'm 6 foot tall and blonde, and everybody there is over 6 foot tall and blonde. So I'm like, this is my tribe. Where have you guys been? Where have you guys been my whole life? But
I feel that way in Canada. They are serious about peace, and they are serious about comedy. So between the two, I fit right in Canada. And most of my friends on the social networks are from Canada. I can't really believe it.
I love Canada too, and I have been to Canada countless times from east to west and west to east, and there are amazing people there, but of course the government is a neocon government, and they have been slowly descending into this crazy connection with the United States that the people of Canada oppose.
Cindy, before we run out of time, I would like you to send a message to Diane Steele, who is suffering for weeks now. She's sick. So she was going to come on and ask a few questions herself, but she's not well. So if you send a message to Diane Steele, I'm sure she would value that.
Oh, I didn't know she was sick.
For weeks now, yes, and it seems to be getting worse.
Does she just have some kind of virus or something?
Yes, I believe so, and an ear infection is the latest thing. But
I have an ear infection right now.
Huh.
I do. I have my right
that
ear has
painful.
A really bad inner ear infection. I just went to the doctor on Monday. And I had the flu. I had the flu twice this year. And so, oh, my gosh, yeah, Diane, solidarity. I know. I can feel your pain. And literally I can feel it. And, yeah, it's been a horrible year for that.
Well,
I hope you get better, Diane. I hope you feel better.
I think the chemtrails are making everyone sick. After days where we are dumped upon tremendously, everyone in my family gets sick. So I don't know what they're dumping, but whatever it is, I mean, because you don't know really from day to day what the mix is going to be. We know what the mix has proven to be, but they could change at any moment to nerve gas, you know? I mean, when people talk about their guns being taken away, and I don't suggest anybody's gun be taken away in this environment, who's a civilian, you know? The fact of the matter is they could change that mix any day of the week to nerve gas, and it's all over for everyone. And don't think they haven't thought of that.
Well, yeah. And so I just, like, take really, really good care of my health. I don't have health insurance, which I think is a good thing. I mean, it's not a good thing that I don't have health insurance, but I'm kind of outside of the American medical establishment for sure. And so I do, I take, you know, really good supplements. I eat organically when possible. You know, my diet, I think, is exemplary. I have a really strenuous exercise program. I get plenty of rest. You know, I do everything that should support health. And I've been so sick this year. And stress is a major. You know, when I ran for vice president, I was under an amazing amount of stress. So I think that's when I first got sick, and it's just been hard to recover from. But, yeah, the environment and you know, everything they put in our food and our drink.
Louisiana. Well, you went down to Louisiana, and you really spoke out against the poisoning of that environment.
Yeah.
And the children are dying down there.
Mm-hmm.
The children are so sick because of their small little body compared to all the toxins. It affects them far worse than the adults. And you think that they're children, they're strong, they can survive. But in fact, they're the ones who are seriously ill.
Right. Well, and
so
the similar thing goes to, I just want to use Iraq as an example, where the U.S. used depleted uranium and so many other toxins and poisons in the environment. And the children there are getting so many leukemias and hard tumors and birth defects. And so one of the things for Tour de Peace that we're doing is that we're trying to raise money along the way. And, you know, raise money for our expenses, yes, but anything we have left over at the end, we're going to divide between two charities. One of the charities that we're going to donate to gives medicine and medical supplies to Basra, which is in Iraq, which is one of the most affected and poisoned places in Iraq from the U.S. Intervention there, war there, occupation, whatever. And then the other charity we're given to is the Afghan Youth for Peace organization. So we wanted
Wonderful.
To split it between one organization that's doing work in Afghanistan and one that's doing work in Iraq.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much, Cindy Sheehan, Peace Mom. Everyone knows you as the Peace Mom. But thank you very much, Cindy Sheehan, my friend and a woman of tremendous fortitude, and everybody respects you. They may not like you. You are controversial, but everybody respects you. So
well,
thank
Sally,
you so
thank you, and I hope some of you and your friends will meet us in D.C. on July 3rd and help us raise some ruckus there.
Well, we're raising ruckus in April for Autism Awareness Month there, so I don't know if I will be, but I will do my best.
Okay, Sally, thank you. I love you. I'll talk
Very
to you
my
soon.
Friend. I love you, too. Bye.
Bye-bye.